Welcome to Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman, serial entrepreneur, author, and podcast host. Whether success for you is more money, time with your family, a healthy, well-balanced life, or freedom, I'm interviewing guests and getting you the advice to make it happen. So join me as we uncomplicate the complicated, help you define success, and give you the strategies to make it happen. Welcome back to another episode of Success Is, where we dive deep into the minds of the entrepreneurs and leaders shaping the business landscape. I'm your host, Phil Portman, serial entrepreneur and business growth strategist. Today, we have an incredibly special guest, Bill Flynn, a multi-certified growth coach and the author of the best-selling book, Further Faster. With over 30 years of experience advising hundreds of companies from early stage startups to industry giants, Bill has been on the front lines of success and failure. And through it all, he's learned invaluable lessons about what it takes to grow a thriving business. I couldn't be more excited to dive into his wealth of knowledge today. So without further ado, let's welcome Bill Flynn to the show. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Hey, Phil. Thanks a lot. I love being incredibly special.
And you are. So let's kick it off with, what does success mean to you, Bill?
Sure. Actually, I put this in my book that you mentioned. I adapted it from John Wooden, who some may know as the head coach of the UCLA basketball team many, many decades ago, and was extremely successful over a long period of time. And so my definition is a peace of mind attained only through self-satisfaction in knowing you made the effort to do the best of which you are capable to grow your business, yourself, and your team.
That's awesome. That's a great quote. So what initially drew you to the startup world, and how did your early experiences shape your approach to business?
Yeah, so I was lucky enough to have a family member who was an investment banker and then a venture capitalist. And he sort of said to me when I was in my early 20s, you know, I said, looking to figure out what I want to do. I was managing a Papagino's, which is a local pizza chain around here, graduating from college. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do. So I just chatted with him and he set up some informational interviews and one of them hired me. So it was already a public company, but it was very much a high-tech startup kind of thing and got me into that world. And I liked the pace. And then you get to meet people and, you know, you sort of get into that. In the end, I ended up doing 10 of them over about 25 years. And the thing that I think really drives me is the puzzle. I love puzzles in all sorts of forms. And a startup is just one big puzzle. And I think that's why I did it for so long.
Absolutely. Once you've been through that, it's kind of addicting, right? Like the thing around the startup, the challenges, and they're exciting. I'd love to hear like some of the biggest challenges you faced while leading a startup and how you overcame them.
Some of the biggest challenges we had were really, I think, fundamental to startups in general. And now that I've been researching business for like 30 years and really intensely in the last 7 or 8, and I've learned a lot of stuff that I wish I knew way back then, because I would have done things differently than we actually did. And it's mostly that you have this idea, and I'm not usually the idea guy. I was usually the guy who came in to help scale the thing. So I wasn't the visionary or the initial founder of really anything, but very often I'd be brought in. I was a head of sales 8 times and out of the 10. And what I learned was that we too often fall in love with the idea and we don't actually fall in love with the problem or the customer. And so we spend a lot of time sort of convincing people or trying to convince people of how smart we are and how clever we are and what a wonderful idea this is. And, you know, they're all doing their own thing. They're just trying to run their business and get things done. And you know, our job is just to make their life easier. It's not to convince them that our thing is the best thing out there. So that was, I think, one of the biggest challenges, especially being head of sales, is we had a lot of headwinds. And luckily, in the first probably 5 or 6, I started in the 90s. And, you know, most startups in the 90s were overfunded. So we were able to make a lot of mistakes, and we sort of stumbled our way to some sort of success, if you will. But as things changed over time, it became harder and harder. And I actually did really well in terms of success. Most startups, they say 90% of startups fail. I don't know how accurate that is, but that's sort of the conventional wisdom. And I was 5 for 6, so way above average. The last 4 were not so good. And that's where I think it came to a head, where these founders, I couldn't convince that, you know, nobody really cares what you do. They just care what you do does for them. And if it doesn't do anything better than what they're doing today, or enough better, then they're not going to do anything. So I think that's one of the struggles. That's one of the biggest struggles I've seen.
Absolutely. No, I see that a lot of times, especially in tech. It's like, hey, we've got this new technology, right? Be it we've got crypto and blockchain and all that stuff, right? How do we use that in business? And they're looking at it the wrong way, right?
It's
the chains on the bicycle, right? You're not building the bicycle around the chain, right? It's just, it's the thing that's moving the rest of the gears.
Exactly. And
I see that all the time in business. We're seeing that with AI, it seems like now, right? Where it's like, okay, we've got AI. How do we make money off of this? And I think that's a really bad way to look at business, right? It should be solving problems, fixing things, taking care of the customer and stuff.
Well, as I have a little more gray hair than you do, Phil. So I actually was selling quote unquote AI in 1993. And we called it AI, right? So what is AI, right? And so, you know, and there are people out there that says AI is nothing. If you have intelligence, it's not artificial intelligence. It's an organic thing, but whatever. So this is probably our third or fourth version of quote unquote AI that we've gone through over the last 15 or 20 years. I think this one has legs, but I agree with you. It's just a tool. It's not a solution. It's just another thing that hopefully will accelerate something else. I agree. We unfortunately look at things. We don't look at the problem and trying to figure out what is the problem we're trying to solve for our customer. Is it worth solving? Will they pay us money to solve this problem? Are there unmet needs in the company that are doing this? And my example is often Google Maps versus Waze, right? Google's made a much better map than MapQuest, for those of us who are old enough to understand, to know what MapQuest is. But they thought they were in the maps business, and to some degree they were, but maps are just a tool as well. And Waze said, how do we use maps to get from point A to point B? The problem to solve was getting someone from point A to point B on time. And Google Maps was okay, but it certainly wasn't great. It didn't, you know, it used traffic and other things, but that was always behind, 10, 15, 20 minutes behind. So, I mean, I live in Boston. Commuting into work has always been a challenge. And I would listen to the radio or do my Google Maps thing. And I'd get to the spot where they say it was really crowded and it wasn't anymore. Or I'd get to a spot where they said it was wide open and there's tons of traffic. So it didn't really work. But Waze said, you know, what technology, what tools are out there? There's the gyroscope and all sorts of other tools within the phone. And then the actual phone, the ubiquity of the phone itself, they use those tools and said, that's how we can solve this problem in a much better way. And that's why Google eventually bought them for somewhere between $1.3 and $1.6 billion. So solving the problem is also very profitable.
Very lucrative. Absolutely. Yeah. Especially if you can do it better, faster, some capacity than others around you. Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, that was honestly some of the problem with the original smartphones, right? Remember those? And they were like, we want to force this because we have it, but why? So I want to transition into your book, Further Faster. So you talk a lot about leader specific. The CEO must fire himself from day to day. Why is that?
So your job eventually, so you start the company, there's like whatever, 5, 6, 10 of you, whatever it is, some small number. And you're doing everything. You're doing everything day to day. You know, you're not only doing the long-term thinking, but you're also doing the short-term operational and tactical stuff. And what happens is we get sort of enamored of that. We get good at it. But at some point, your job isn't to do the day-to-day anymore. It is to predict the future. And predicting the future is a completely different way of doing it. I like to say the product is now the company. It is no longer the thing that you're selling. And if you look at that as a product, how do you make that the most valuable thing? So in case someday you want to sell it, it's as valuable as it can be. Your multiple on EBITDA or whatever that is as high as possible. The only way to really do that is to predict the future. And I think, you know, Abraham Lincoln said the best way to predict your future is to create it. And it's very hard to run the day-to-day, right? Having people in your office and out of your office, you know, making all these little tiny decisions. I like to often ask my podcast hosts and others, you know, when do you get your best ideas? Because the future is about innovation or a creation event. So Phil, when you get your best ideas, what are you doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So I had this thought a while ago because I found that my best ideas were coming at night, right before I was going to bed, yep, or in the shower. Mm-hmm. So I actually did something about that.
Did you?
I actually schedule myself downtime to do nothing but think.
Yep.
So it's amazing. And because, you know, it's like you're input all day long and you never have time to process it.
Yep.
So the only time you're processing all of that input and all of that stuff is, unfortunately, when you're trying to go to sleep, right? Or you have silence. And I don't think us entrepreneurs and leaders have enough downtime. So for me, I started scheduling it. And so it used to be just before bed and shower, but now I actually have time where I reflect, where I do nothing, and I get most of my creative thoughts and ideas during those times.
Yeah, that's not unusual, right? It's funny, Brian Halligan, who is the founder of HubSpot, I know him just because we're both in the general area and know a lot of the same people, and we stay connected. And a number of years ago, 5, 6, 7 years ago, they had gone from zero to $450 million in 6 years. And I shot him a note and I said, congratulations. And I said, hey, if you could just attribute one thing that you did that you believe contributed the most to that happening, what would that one thing be? And he said exactly what you said. He said, every Friday, I went home, I stayed home, and I thought. I just thought all day. And I came up with things to come in the office with on Monday and ask questions. And, you know, it was about two key constituencies: the team and the customer, right? Those are, if you can just focus on how to make those lives of those people better, so they're as fulfilled and engaged and satisfied as possible, you're well ahead of everyone else. Most people don't do that. They think of, you know, the product or the feature or whatever, but they don't really think about the main purpose of why you're doing it, which is to create a company so people can thrive. Because when people are thriving, they have autonomy and mastery and all these wonderful things. They're actually doing things on your behalf without you ever having to ask them. They're driving you. And then, of course, for the customer, right? It's you know, Ash Mora says a great thing, which is it's life is too short to build something that nobody wants. And so I think if you do that, you're much in better shape. You have a much better chance of being successful.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more. You know, it's funny. I used to, my employees would always say, you know, we hate it when you're on vacation or you're traveling somewhere or something like that, because our workload increases because you come up with all these ideas, you know, during that time. But, you know, you touched on something else a few times that you've talked about, and I think it's the overall company culture, which I think is incredibly important with a business.
Yep.
And I've addressed that with the team before and saying, hey, if somebody were to copy our exact product, our service, would they be our company? Like if they had everything we offered, like let's say it was all open source, they could download and copy it. Would they be our company?
Right.
And the answer is no. Right. And if they had our playbook and all that stuff and how we market it, would they be our company? And I'd say no. Right. Because our company is a collection of all of those things. And it's the people that actually run it. It's the customer service. It's the relationships that are built. It's all of it. It's the entire company around it. It's not just the one component. And I feel like a lot of times in business, that's missed. It's this good idea. And that's it. That's going to make the business. But they're missing the entire infrastructure, the brand, the culture, the things that create that and bring life into that beyond just the idea stage or the core implementation stage. Do you see that at all in startups?
Yeah, well, I think that's also why many startups fail, right? They focus on the idea. And the idea is a good start, right? And I'm not saying that we shouldn't have ideas because they spark other things. There's a great saying by Mike Tyson is, a plan is great until you get punched in the face. And what happens is if your idea isn't something that makes people's lives better, that helps them with struggle, that helps them with progress, then they're not going to literally punch you in the face, but they're going to say all the nice things. They're going to say, wow, that's wonderful. And it's so great. And it sounds like a great solution. But when you start to ask them for money or time, suddenly they're quiet, right? It's because you haven't really helped them. You've just shared something and didn't really understand what value is to them. And I think that's, to me, what you're talking about is the essence of strategy. You talk about sort of this culture thing. And I think the best example, at least that most people know, is Southwest, right? Because they were very large companies that copied what they did exactly, and they still couldn't do it, right? There was TED, which was from United. There was Continental Light. There was Song from Delta. And they basically just copied everything that was done at Southwest, but none of those different versions of airlines exist today. The only one that has really maintained is Southwest because of those things. And I think the other thing that I would say is that when I think about strategy, a lot of people, so I did a lot of talking, a lot of speaking when I was first starting the business, and I've been in front of hundreds, if not thousands, of CEOs and things, and I would generally do the same kind of workshop or whatever. And I would ask them, when I say strategy, how would you define strategy to someone who doesn't know what it is? And very often I would get, it's a plan or a roadmap or whatever. And these are leaders of very large, or some of them were, approaching, if not already, $1 billion, right? And had been around for generations. And if these folks aren't really clear on what a strategy is, then of course they're doing some of the things that you're saying. Because to me, strategy has three main components to it. And I sort of adopted Michael Porter's version, and I kind of combined his stuff with Alan Mulally, who was the head of Ford and Boeing for a number of years. And to me, a strategy is a unique position incorporating a differentiating set of interdependent activities, producing solutions our core customers want and value. And those three things, being unique, having interdependent activities, so not having just one thing that, as you say, can just be copied eventually. And then the word value, right? Value is about them, not about you. And I think that's often what is missing in most strategies, but those that have it are tremendous, right? IKEA has a great strategy. Apple has a great strategy. IKEA is about flat pack furniture. Apple is simply amazing and amazingly simple. Southwest is wheels up. They have really thought about it so they can crystallize it into a small phrase that everyone understands and makes sense to every employee. And that's what they work around. That's how they then do their tactics and their day-to-day execution.
Yeah. It was interesting. I was just reading an article and was talking about the $150 million investment that Microsoft made to keep Apple alive. Do you remember that?
Yep. Right?
And what Steve Jobs talked about at the time is that it changed his perspective on trying to be another Microsoft, because that was during a time where they were failing because they had lost their identity. They didn't understand who they were, and they were basically trying to compete with Microsoft, which, as we now see, is a completely different, product. But when they actually got the investment from it, they said, wait a minute, can we still coexist with Microsoft? And they did. They actually, Microsoft became one of their biggest software producers for Apple at the time, and obviously saved them from bankruptcy.
Yep.
Part of that I find with startups as well is, people are often like looking for just that original idea. And I don't think that's always necessary. I think if you can understand, you know, your strategy, the market you're serving, who you are, what you're going to bring or what you're going to offer, you don't have to be the first one to come up with this scheme. You just got to do it better than or different than your competitors.
Yeah, and that's happened many, many times. I think Microsoft is a good example. Is the joke when I was, you know, younger was, you know, you always had to wait for the third version of whatever they made to actually have it be useful, you know, and then they would dominate whatever, you know, market. And there were lots of people out there in front of them. So they were late to mobile, and then they, you know, they finally did something decent in mobile. And so I agree, you know, and to again, stay in this Microsoft Apple thing. When the iPhone first came out, Steve Ballmer, who was running Apple, was running Microsoft then, you know, was very arrogant about the iPhone. And he said, oh, this thing is terrible and no one's going to use it. It doesn't have a keyboard. You know, he was saying, you know, hardly anyone's going to buy this. It's $500. Who's going to pay $500 for a mobile phone? And by the way, he was right. They only had 4% market share, like when they first came out, but they had 50% of the profit. They made more profit than anyone else on 4% of the market. So if you can figure out value, people will pay you a lot of money for that. But we don't do that, right? We don't do that enough. We sort of say we can be better than them, and they just sort of incrementalize, you know. So I love inventors, right? I know Elon Musk is an interesting figure, but he is a true inventor, right? He is making things that no one has ever done before or thought of a way of doing before. We haven't had those in a long time. We've had people who just copy other stuff and incrementalize, you know, that he's an Edison or a Tesla or, you know, pick your inventor of Tom, what's his name from International Business Machines, whatever it is, you know, those were inventors, right? I think we need more of those.
Couldn't agree with you more. Absolutely. No, it's exciting to watch some of that stuff, and you know, you're watching history being made. And
exactly.
That's a perfect example of too, like the approach where for years company had tried pushing out the electric car, right? But they pushed out this terrible box that was just to save people money, right? Or what, I don't know what the premise was around it, but it was a cheap piece of garbage that no one wanted to drive or be seen in. And he made it sexy. I mean, that's really where he started with it, you know, and created an entirely new industry that that no one ever thought would be successful. I think that's fascinating. And then landing the rockets and all that stuff. I mean, it's really interesting what he's doing. But
just to put a finer point on that. So to me, but that's all about Mars, right? The reason he has the three companies is because his vision is Mars. And so he said, we need better battery technology. And he's doing that with his car. We need a better way to use resources from a space perspective. So he did SpaceX. And I don't know if you saw recently, they caught a booster. Yeah. That was pretty
incredible.
Cool. Right?
Incredible.
And then the solar panels that he's doing, right? With you know, and so these are three main technologies that he needs so he can go to Mars. He has a bigger vision than even those, which is amazing.
Absolutely. If in general, if you want to have a successful, rewarding, productive life, figure out what your greater purpose is and start aligning yourself towards that greater purpose. Because the people who have that figured out, wake up excited, energetic, can't wait to meet the day, don't get stopped by little obstacles and speed bumps and things like that, because they are looking at the North Star, not the little waves and stuff like that that are moving them back and forth and around. And that's really what he has. You're 100% right on that.
Yep.
So I want to talk a little bit, just kind of wrapping up this episode. There's a couple things I want to talk about. But before we get into that, if you'd want your audience to take away one thing from this episode today, what piece of advice would you really like them to walk away with?
So we'll stick with the original theme, which is sort of fire yourself. So in life and or in business, few things truly matter, but those that do matter tremendously. And you as a leader or a father or whatever, if you just figure out those few things that truly matter to yourself and or whatever you're trying to solve for, and optimize those, a lot of the other stuff it will be unnecessary. You know, you cannot overestimate the unimportance of almost anything. But those few things that truly matter, if you do that as a leader, especially for those two constituencies that we talked about, you're in a much better position to be successful. It won't guarantee success, but it certainly puts you in a much, much better position to be successful.
Absolutely. So looking forward for you, what's next in your career? Are there any new ventures or areas of growth that you're particularly excited about?
Honestly, no. I'm at the end, right? What I want to do is I want to take what I've learned through my own experience and, you know, the research I've done and the study that I've done, which I find is unusual. The approach that I've taken to understand success and understand business success primarily has been unusual. I'm surprised some of the things that I say to some of these people whose books I've read and thought leaders that I've had who just love that perspective, because I've done a lot of what Elon Musk has done, is like, what are the principles of success, right? What are those things that, regardless of what you're trying to do in business, are the things that are the threads that get you there no matter what? And you know, the one thing that I mentioned, which I didn't do directly, but the few things that truly matter is really the Pareto principle, right? That's the law of the vital few. That is so true in business and in life. And you need to understand that as a business leader. Understanding how the brain works a little bit, being brain friendly as a leader, is so important, because you don't understand that this little 3-pound mass of gray and white matter is working against us all the time. And you as a leader are putting people into threat mode inadvertently, which is then making running your business even more difficult. So, those are the things that I think have made a difference in sort of what I've been doing. And I'm trying to show as many people that will listen how you can. It's already hard enough to run a business and be successful, but don't make it any harder by not understanding these just few things. You know, it's like just a handful of things that if you really focused on them, you'd be in a much better place than most businesses are today. You know, half of businesses die in 5 years and about 80 some odd percent die in 25. But those that survive, many of them struggle. There are very few that thrive, but there is a thread of those that thrive that is the same thread. And that's basically what my book is about, right? Focus on those few things that truly matter in business, which is team, building an operating system that you can replicate on, and use cash as your primary financial metric, not revenue or profit.
So for those of you that want to learn more about your journey and insights, where can they find additional information about you and your work?
Sure. Best thing is my website, which is catalystgrowthadvisors.com. My book is on there. You can download it for free. As I said, it's about the message, not about the money. I don't make much money off the book anyway. Or you can get it on Amazon or Audible. I write a blog post or a newsletter, whatever you want to call it, a couple times a month, which is really the sort of short, actionable things to do as a leader. And I try to crystallize what I've learned and put out a few things, a couple of things every month for folks to read. All my stuff is on there. So that's the best thing, is up on the screen, that website.
Outstanding. Well, thank you. And that brings us to the end of another insightful episode of Success Is. A huge thanks to you, Bill Flynn, for joining us today and sharing your incredible journey. Bill, it's been a pleasure having you on our show, and we're grateful for your time, your wisdom, and showing us that success isn't just about what you accomplish, but your impact that you leave behind. And to all of our listeners, thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and share it with others who are on their own journey to success. Remember, success is not just a destination. It's a continuous journey of learning, growth, and preservation. Thank you for listening to this episode of Successes Podcast.